Hi everyone. I'm Janet B. I'm recovered from compulsive eating and bulimia. So this topic, top tips for sponsors. I just want to actually start out and address people who are looking for sponsors, because sometimes people just like say, okay, I'll put in the chat I'm looking for a sponsor, and someone will put in the chat I'm a sponsor, and they assume like, okay, it's a match made in heaven. And maybe, but maybe not. And I'm going to say as a sponsee, you have a right to pick your sponsor. And, I think the best tip I could give is to find someone who has what you want. It's okay to ask someone, have you worked the steps? How's your marriage now that you've worked the steps? How's your job now that you've worked the steps? Kind of what's your life like? What were you like? What do you do? What do you require? I know for myself, the sponsor that I have, I wanted what she had because she just seemed to have God. Like she just relied on God. And I just remember saying to her, and I had already been through the steps, my current sponsor. I've been with her about, I don't know, 6-ish years. And I remember just saying, if you want me to change up my food plan, if you want me to, like, whatever you want me to do, I'll do, because I wanted what she had. So that's just like kind of what I would say to sponsees. And, for both the sponsor and sponsee, I was thinking about it this morning, and the line in the big book that struck me is, God wants us to keep our head in the clouds with him, but our feet on the earth, because that's where our fellow travelers are. So if I've been through the steps, my head in the clouds with God means I'm supposed to be like focused on God and God's will, and getting better at doing God's will. And aside from that, because I could be getting better at doing the will of like my boss, who I don't have a relationship with other than he gives me a paycheck. But I think head in the clouds with God, also, we're supposed to be falling more and more in love with God and realizing even more how much God loves us and forgives us and will take care of us. So when we sponsor, that's the main thing we want to teach our sponsees. Because what as we go through the steps, we learn the only way we can recover is through a relationship with God. And I think if we're excited about our own relationship with God, that'll help us, right? On page 164, it says, obviously, you can't transmit something you don't have. See to it that your own relationship with God is right, and great things will come to pass for you and countless others. So the very first tip I would give to a sponsor is to make sure you've gone through the steps properly. And if you haven't, go through them again, and that your relationship with God is right. And then just a couple things. My printer broke, and my husband had the nerve to not be home tonight, so I'm maybe a little scattered with my notes, but we'll do our best. People recover best when they're comfortable. We always, I think we can all remember the teacher or maybe even the sponsor who we were terrified of. And we can't learn that way. And we're certainly not going to be honest. So we want to make our sponsees feel comfortable. Now, that being said, that doesn't mean if they say, oh, I can't make any phone calls every day. So, yeah, that thing you're telling me about calling others, I can't do that. Making them comfortable doesn't mean saying, oh, okay, that's okay. You just do whatever you want. But making them comfortable means they feel cared about, not just like, okay, I'm sponsoring you because this is what I have to do to stay abstinent, but I care about you. If your car breaks down and you're local to me, I'm going to come pick you up. If you get sick, I'm going to make a meal for your family, right? So that kind of that we offer them friendship and fellowship. So we want to at the beginning just make sure the person feels cared about. And that's why, I mean, when this all got started, there was no Zoom. Everyone met in person, and they would generally grab a cup of coffee and, talk. And that's what we want to do at first. We call it the Starbucks conversation. If we're local and there's no pandemic, We go to Starbucks and we just talk. We tell our story. We listen to their story. And the goal is to whet their appetite enough, no pun intended, whet their appetite for the solution so that they'll say, what do I have to do? And then bingo, hit the jackpot. Now, if we're not local, I highly recommend working FaceTime or Zoom or something, because I know if I'm talking to someone and they think, oh, you know, I'm being tough, if they see me and they see me smiling, it goes a long way. And you can just develop more of a rapport if you can see the other person. And also make sure that while you're talking to your sponsee, she's not like doing her nails or, you know, watching TV or something. So I would say, if at all possible, you want to be able to see each other. So let's say a person is interested. There's usually a little script that I start out, because I want to, first, I want to make them see the hopelessness, and then I want to give them hope. So Trish, I'm on page 3. So I start out and I say, it's possible to never, ever binge again. And then they say, what? And I say, okay, most of us have seen episodes of Law and Order where a diplomat from a foreign country lives in New York, or comes to New York for a visit, commits a murder, but, you know, Benson and Stabler can't touch him because he has diplomatic immunity. He's protected. Or think about getting a vaccine, like against the coronavirus. We get the vaccine so we have immunity. Now imagine having immunity from compulsive eating, being protected. That's exactly what the big book promises us, immunity from compulsive eating. And then I tell the person, open your book and just read the first sentence on page 89. Okay. Patricia, you want to?
Okay, on page 89.
Yep, first sentence only.
Practical experience shows, is that right?
Yep.
Okay, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics.
Okay, so they're telling me that if I work intensely, and that means taking other people through the steps with other compulsive eaters, I'm immune, I'm protected. Now, if it was easy as all that, we'd all just go to one meeting, read that, and go out and start helping others. But there's a requirement for working with others. So if we go to page 60 and we read just step 12, we see what it says there.
Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics.
Okay, so there's two important things here. What the heck is a spiritual awakening, right? We want to tell people what we're going for. And it's defined as a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism, or for us, compulsive eating. And that means we're going to stop eating compulsively. The idea that someone is better, right? Like, I have fewer resentments, I have more serenity, even though I'm still in the food. We're not doing that. That's not the kind of spiritual awakening this program talks about. In fact, when people say, well, I'm still eating compulsively, but this program is helping me be more spiritual, all we're doing is perpetuating the denial syndrome. And then how do we get a spiritual experience? Step 12 tells us what Trisha just read. Having had a spiritual awakening or spiritual experience as the result of these steps. So if we do these steps, we'll have a personality change. It's like God coming in and rewiring our hearts and just expelling the obsession. And then in order to stay in that state of freedom, we have to keep helping others. So I asked the person, okay, does that interest you? And if I've done my job right, they say yes. I mean, it could be I've done my job right. And they just say, yeah, you know what? It sounds good, but yeah, I'm not willing to do the work. And then we part friends. We never like say, well, you're an idiot if you don't want to do this. We part friends. And we still go to pick them up if their car breaks down on the side of the road. because we're not just about being friends in order to put a notch on my belt of how many people I've taken through the steps. We're friends because we're called to just be kind and love and serve each other. So hopefully the person says, yes, I'm interested. You know, will you sponsor me? And so in the big book, it says in the chapter Working with Others that we give the person the book and we ask them to read it. It's almost like a test, like, okay, this is what it is. Come back and see if you want it. If it's a brand newcomer who's never been around, I might do that. I might say, read the text section. I've done it in the past. Read the text section and call me when you're done. Generally, though, people have been to meetings and they're familiar. And now in the days of podcasts, I give them a podcast. And I'll say, okay, I did this podcast of the doctor's opinion. And I'll text them the link or email them the link. And I'll say, I want you to listen to it. And when you listen, as in all podcasts, you're not doing your nails, you're not watching TV, you're sitting listening with your journal, your big book, and a pen. And I tell them, I want you to write down three things that stand out to you and any questions. And I say, and then text me when you're done and we'll set up an appointment. So after that, I usually, I give them work, it's like, now we can set an appointment. But the first time, you know, they may decide they don't want to. So I may text them or call them 3 or 4 days later if I don't hear from them. And then if they ghost me, I move on. But again, hopefully they don't. So in a few days, the next day, we'll get together and I'll ask them, okay, you know, tell me the three things that stood out to you. And I'll listen. And if they have any questions, I'll answer the questions. And then I usually point out a few things from each chapter that I think are relevant. So just, again, I think everyone can develop their own, but just here's a sample of what I do for the doctor's opinion. And when I ask the person to read, I ask them to read the text. And this is also why it's great to be on Zoom, because I tell them, I'll be interrupting you constantly to just give my notes. And it's easier when you can see each other. So Tricia, can you read on page Roman numeral 29?
Okay. After they have succumbed to this to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless the person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery.
Okay, so then I would say, unless there's a psychic change, there's no hope of recovery. And they talk about a resolution and a decision. A resolution is, I won't drink again. I won't binge again. A decision is different. And what decision does the book talk about? Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So just saying, I won't do something isn't good enough. We have to say, I will do something. And obviously it has to be the right thing. If I make a decision to just eat lettuce for a month, that's not a decision that's going to help me. So the only solution they tell me is a psychic change. Tricia, go ahead.
Okay. So once a psychic change has occurred, or I'll start with on the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. The only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules.
Okay, so once there's this psychic change, it gets easy. It gets easy. Go ahead.
Men have cried out to me in sincere and despairing appeal. Doctor, I cannot go on like this. I have everything to live for. I must stop, but I cannot. You must help me.
Okay, so then I say, desire alone isn't enough. No one would ever tell someone with cancer that if their cancer cells are still multiplying, they don't have a strong enough desire to recover from cancer. So I reassure the person that, okay, if you haven't recovered, it's not necessarily because you don't have the desire. Go ahead.
Okay. Starting with about one year prior to this experience, a man was brought in to be treated for chronic alcoholism. He had but partially recovered from a gastric hemorrhage and seemed to be a case of pathological mental deterioration. He had lost everything worthwhile in life and was only living, one might say, to drink. He frankly admitted and believed that for him, there was no hope. Following the elimination of alcohol, there was found to be no permanent brain injury. He accepted the plan outlined in this book. 1 year later, he called to see me, and I experienced a very strange sensation. I knew the man by name and partly recognized his features, but there all resemblance ended. From a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck had emerged a man brimming over with self-reliance and contentment. I talked with him for some time, but was not able to bring myself to feel that I had known him before. To me, he was a stranger. And so he left me. A long time has passed with no return to alcohol.
Okay, so here we have a summary of the whole book in a paragraph. So note the progression here. The guy admitted for him there was no hope, hopeless, admitted he was powerless. He was willing to go to any lengths, right? He accepted the plan outlined in this book. He did the work, and then he experienced a transformation. From a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck had emerged a man brimming over with self-reliance and contentment, and recovery can be permanent. The doctor said about this man, a long time has passed with no return to alcohol. And I tell them, this can be your story. And then I just say, flip to the very last lines of the chapter.
The doctor earnestly advises every alcoholic to read this book through, and though perhaps he came to scoff, he may remain to pray.
So the doctor's last piece of advice is to do what's in this book and to pray. So that's kind of it. That's what, you know, I go over their questions, what they found important. Again, they've listened to my podcast so that where I go into depth on pretty much the entire chapter. And then I say, okay, are you willing? Like, do you want to work together? And if they say yes, I ask them to go to page 58 and read the two requirements for being sponsorable.
Got it. There. Sorry. Page 58.
So I got it. So it says, if you decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So I say, do you want what we have? Spiritual healing based on applying these steps. And they generally say yes. And are you willing to go to any lengths to get it? And they generally say yes. And then I generally say, well, before you say yes, let me tell you what I require. Different sponsors may require different things, but here's what I require. So I tell people they need to be on a weighed and measured food plan. If someone says, you know, putting my food on a scale triggers me, then I say, okay, no, I'm not the right sponsor for you. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I can't work that way. Because for me, especially when someone's new, if you put your food on a scale and in a measuring cup, you know for sure you're not overeating and you're not undereating. So there's no chatter in the head. And it's also submitting to a discipline. How am I going to ever submit to God if I can't submit to a discipline around my food? So, and I say, text me your food before breakfast. And I say, the food plan can be one you already have that you got from a nutritionist somewhere else, one that you're not hungry on and doesn't include your binge foods. And I say, if you're not sure if something's a trigger, just leave it out. When you're through the steps, you can revisit it. But for now, leave it out. I don't make people leave out things that I don't have. For instance, I don't have diet soda, But if someone wants to have diet soda, I'm certainly not going to tell her that she can't. This is an area where people often have very strong opinions. So I make it a point, I don't discuss my food plan with anyone other than my sponsor, my nutritionist. And so I'll just work with my sponsee. And if it's a food plan she gets from a nutritionist, even if like she has 3 cans of diet soda a day, if it's not triggering her to binge, this isn't about becoming like the healthiest person on the planet. It's about not eating compulsively. Now, if she comes, I did once have a sponsee who thought she could have dessert like twice a day. And in that case, I would say, you know, I would ask you to not do it while we're working the steps. And, you know, if you first, if someone does that and can do it, the odds are they probably aren't compulsive eaters, but it's not for me to judge. But if there's something that I makes me feel like, oh, this doesn't sit right with me, I just say like, oh, let's say someone wants to drink. And I say, you know what, when you're through the steps, then that's, you can pray and meditate on it and maybe come up with a reasonable alcohol plan for yourself. Like, you know, I have a sponsee, I think she has like 2 drinks a month or whatever. Some people can't, but I say for now, while you're going through the steps, let's keep it tight. If someone isn't willing to do that for the time it takes to go through the steps, you know, maybe I'm just not the right sponsor for them. So be on a food plan, weigh to measure, turn it over to me. Another non-negotiable I have is to spend 30 minutes every morning in quiet time with God, prayer, meditation, spiritual reading, because those of us who are married or dating know that when you get involved in a relationship with someone, you have to spend time with them, getting to know them. We want to get into this love relationship with God, so we need to spend time getting to know him. So we read to learn about him. We pray, it's where we talk to him, and we meditate is where we listen to him. I tell them they need to make 3 phone calls a day, and that doesn't mean leaving 3 messages on answering machines. It means 3 live phone conversations, and at least 2 need to be with people in recovery, people ahead of them in recovery. And I give them at least 12 numbers to get them started with. I tell them how many meetings a week to attend. Sometimes it's a meeting a day. It differs depending on the person's circumstances, right? If it's a single mother with 6 kids and 3 jobs, you know, I probably won't say you need to go to a meeting a day, but at a minimum, I ask people, this was when things were in person, to attend a local meeting, because I personally think the founders were big on local fellowship. And again, if my car breaks down, I know Tricia loves me, but she's not going to drive from New Hampshire to New Jersey. So we want local fellowship. And I ask them to generally attend meetings that I attend. I tell them to help others. Look for ways to be of use to others that involve self-sacrifice. And by definition, self-sacrifice means I'm giving something up in order to be of use to someone else. And I explain that this time of working the steps, which is usually 6 to 10 weeks, unless you're Isabella and do it in like 20 some odd days, it's usually about 6 to 10 weeks, and it's considered a hospitalization period. And this means no vacation. I mean, again, there's exceptions. If you have something planned with your kids that they're looking forward to, generally you're not going to cancel on them. But it's not like, oh, I think I'll call my girlfriend and we'll spend, you know, 3 days at the spa. No, no, nothing like that. Try not to eat out. This isn't the time to start a new hobby that will take up lots of time. Basically, we do recovery work. We go to work. We take care of our family obligations and hygiene. And we do enough exercise to keep healthy. If someone is an exercise bulimic, then that amount can get worked out the same way that a food plan gets worked out. And then I give her the next assignment. So I say, okay, listen to the podcast on Bill's story. three things that stand out to you and any questions. And I generally want to be talking to her the next day because I want to move quickly. Now, question that some people might have, what if your sponsee picks up at the beginning? Or I would say this applies anytime. So the first thing I would say is to see if she's doing everything you're asking her to do. If she is, I would say we continue to work with her and find out, you know, we have some more suggestions. If she isn't, what I do is I remind the person, hey, you agreed to go to any lengths. And if you're not, it won't work. Not that I'm not willing to help you, but it won't work. It's like if I had, I guess, diabetes and I go back to the doctor and she's saying your blood sugar is like out of control. And I say, yeah, I'm not willing to take insulin. Well, you know, I can't expect to get better. So I tell the person, if you're not willing to do the work, it's not going to work. And I give them a couple of chances. And if they still keep picking up and they say, yeah, I'm not making my phone calls or I'm not spending time with God, then I'll give them a couple of chances, but I won't keep working with them indefinitely. If she's doing what you've asked her to and still can't stop binging, then I would consider the following. Again, pre-pandemic days, if the person was local, we can do what the founders did and invite the person to stay at your house. I've had people stay at my house. I've had people, I remember a girl who was bulimic and she couldn't, I said, come eat your dinner at my house. I mean, so we do that for each other. Now, again, now there's COVID and a lot of us are sponsoring people across the country. But the point is we make ourselves available. Another thing you can do is add a requirement that she finds a check-in person to call after each meal. And what I tell my sponsees, if they're doing this, is say, tell your check-in person, like your breakfast, your lunch, your dinner check-in person, give them my number and tell them that if you ever miss calling them, they're to call me and let me know that you didn't call. Now, again, this is just a Band-Aid because we need God to change us. But sometimes we need a Band-Aid. And what that does for that person, if they do it, it demonstrates willingness. And I think also some humility to have to call someone and say, hi, I'm calling to report that I just finished my breakfast. You know, that's a bit humbling. So willingness and humility, great spiritual traits to be developing. The other thing I do is I look at her food plan and see if it's too restrictive. I mean, I've seen some food plans that I've called like starve a rabbit food plan. And I think like, of course, you're eating, you're starving. So then I say, either talk to a nutritionist if they have one, or, you know, I can suggest a food plan, but sometimes it's a food plan. If someone has lunch at 11:30 and doesn't have dinner until 7:30, I'll suggest add a snack in between. This isn't about whoever has the most restrictive food plans wins and is the most spiritual. We're supposed to be eating enough to have enough energy to do God's will. So if I'm going around starving, I'm not going to be thinking about God's will. I'm going to be thinking about, you know, when am I going to eat because I'm starving? So I would do that. And if it's early on, I would skip Bill's story and I would go straight into working on step one and step two. And because remember, we get power once we get to step two. There's no power from reading the doctor's opinion. There's no power by reviewing Bill's story. And there's not even power in step one. We don't get power in step two. We need one to get to two. So I would say skip Bill's story and sit and say, you know what? You're not binging right now. Let's take an hour and a half and get you to step two. And it can be done. Remember, our problem is lack of power. So if we don't have the luxury of time, we want to go straight to the step work. This meeting actually started because I said to my sponsees, I need to get you through the steps quickly. And, you know, everyone can get their PhD in big book later. It's not important to be a big book guru. it's important to access power. And the most important thing for a sponsor, please don't assume that just because someone can't stop eating, that she doesn't want to stop eating. Again, our problem is lack of power, not lack of desire. And some people come in more powerless than others. Generally, I think people get the grace where they can go a few days if they're making the phone calls, if they're doing everything else, but not always. So, you know, we can't be lazy sponsors. So, but let's assume someone reads Bill's story, listens to the podcast. We meet, she tells me three things that stood out to her the most. I may point out some things that I think are really cool in Bill's story. And then we get to work. So my next assignment is to read step one in the AA 12 and 12. I personally have people work out of the AA 12 and 12. I just love it. But if you want to work out of the OA 12 and 12, nothing wrong with it. I use the AA 12 and 12 and the big book. Those are pretty much the only things I use. So I tell them, read step one in the AA 12 and 12. Read chapter two, There Is a Solution. And I might give them another podcast to listen to. Melissa has a really good one on powerlessness and unmanageability. And she has a really good one, Top Tips for Newcomers. So in between, you know, big like step work, I want to sprinkle those in because, you know, good, we want to get them hearing good information. And now with all their spare time, because they're not, you know, going out binging and they're not going out to the movies, they've got time to, you know, immerse themselves in a little more recovery work. And so then when they come back to me and say, okay, read step one, read chapter two, and this is generally just a day between assignments. So within, let's say, 4 days from our first talk, we're diving in. And then I actually have a script that I use. So I start out and I'll just, I don't know, do you guys want to hear like kind of the basic script? Yeah, okay. So Tricia, I am on page 8. Okay. So I start out and I just say this. Imagine this. A newcomer walks into a room, is told to admit she's powerless, and then told to stick to a food plan. It doesn't make sense. It's like a doctor telling someone to admit she has cancer and then saying, great, now that you've admitted it, now make your cancer cells stop multiplying. But the big book doesn't say that. The big book says that once we admit we're powerless, it will provide us with a blueprint for finding and accessing power. That power will result in change to our lives so that by the time we're done, we have a personality change sufficient to overcome compulsive eating. A personality change so strong that we lose interest in selfish things and become interested in our fellows. Fears fall away, like we'll know freedom, happiness, and peace. So the big book is really a blueprint for our recovery journey. It gets us from point A, where we have no power, to point B, where we have power. And with each step, starting with step two, we get a little more power till we're at step 9, where we have freedom. So then I say to my sponsee, okay, let's dive in on page 20, first paragraph.
You may have already asked yourself why it is that all of us became so very ill from drinking. If you're an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? It is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. We shall tell you what we have done.
So the big book is an instruction manual and tells us specifically what we need to do to recover, much like a manual on insulin injection tells a diabetic specifically what she needs to do.
Before going into a detailed discussion, it may be well to summarize some points as we see them.
So the first thing that the writers of the big book did was to explain what powerlessness is. So unlike an illness like cancer, where a person doesn't need to understand the nature of cancer cells and how they multiply, recovery from compulsive eating requires that we understand what powerlessness is So the big book spends a lot of time making sure we really get it. So I have them read that, and just in the interest of time, I'm going to skip a little. And then we talk about the three different types of overeaters, or in the big book calls them the moderate drinker, the hard drinker, and the real alcoholic. And now all of them have problems with alcohol, but only one type is considered an alcoholic. And then we put it into food terms, right? A moderate eater can just stop if her doctor tells her to. It's like my husband went to the doctor a number of years ago. The doctor says, you have high blood pressure. You need to lose about 15 pounds. My husband lost 15 pounds and has kept it off. And if he ever sees the number on the scale creeping up, he just cuts back and goes back to his normal weight. And that's been like, I don't know, 15 years. A hard drinker is further progressed. My friend Elle's husband saw when he had even one glass of wine, he couldn't stop drinking. So he said, I'll never again have even one glass of wine. Sorry, I need to go get my charger or my computer's going to die. Give me a second. So he said, I can't have even one glass of wine. And so he never did. He never did after that. So he was a hard drinker, because it's someone who has the physical problem that once they have the craving, they can't stop, but they're able to not pick up the first drink or not pick up the first compulsive bite. And we call those people hard eaters. And now a hard eater or a hard drinker may need structure and support. And we see some of those people in meetings, right? They need to call in their food. They need the hugs. They need the assignments, the structure and support. But you get real compulsive eaters like I was, and structure and support didn't do it. We are people who need a miracle. Once a real compulsive eater takes the first compulsive bite, she won't be able to stop. And then I direct them to page 22, paragraph 4.
We know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, as he may do for months or years, he reacts much like other men. We are equally positive that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens both in the bodily and mental sense, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. The experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. These observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body.
Okay, so this is really important, I think. If that's all there was to it, right, an allergy, then all we'd have to do is avoid the first compulsive bite. If it were just an allergy to sugar or whatever, then the person would say, okay, great. All I have to do is avoid sugar the rest of my life. But if someone can't do that, the problem isn't just the food. The main problem is in the mind, right? Elle's husband saw that when he had one glass of wine, he couldn't stop. So he decided he would never again have a glass of wine. And to my knowledge, he never has. So for him, what happens to someone with a physical allergy to alcohol when they have the first drink is irrelevant, because he never has the first drink. And for me, I'm severely allergic to cats. If I'm near a cat, I'm liable to have an asthma attack. But that's irrelevant to my life because I stay away from cats. Now, if I was unable to stay away from cats, in spite of knowing that going near them would cause me to have an asthma attack, the main problem wouldn't be the cats. It would be the insanity of my mind. And I tell my sponsees, we're going to talk about that more in depth now and when we go through chapter 3. So then I ask them to, you know, we read a little more in that paragraph. And Tricia, can you just flip to the end, the tragic truth?
Sure. Let's see, to the end, the tragic truth of that paragraph?
No, it's a few paragraphs down.
Oh, okay. The tragic truth is that if the man be a real alcoholic, the happy day may not arrive. He has lost control. At a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. This tragic situation has already arrived in practically every case long before it is suspected.
So it makes no sense to tell someone to just put down the food because she's lost the power of choice and can't just put down the food. No matter how much we want to stop, we can't. See, the problem is often people confuse desire with power. A person could have a strong desire to stop binging, but not have the power to do it. Just like a person with cancer can't make her own cancer cells stop multiplying. And I think we're going to stop here because we're getting close to 9 and I want a little time to answer questions, but we will pick up next week with the end of step one and then just kind of quickly wrap up taking someone through the rest of the steps.